Welcome to Frank on Target, your gateway to the world of politics, controversy, and the great outdoors. Join us as we dive into the heart of today's most pressing issues, explore the latest headlines, and uncover the wonders of nature, all under the enlightened guidance of our host, Frank Santarella.
I'm here with State Representative Robbie Robbins. This is a feature. This isn't, Robbie doesn't have any opposition in this election, so we got no horse in this race. But I brought Robbie in because I want Robbie to tell us what happened in the last legislative session up in Columbia and what he thinks he wants to accomplish in the next session. Robbie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Frank. Thank you for the opportunity to talk this afternoon.
Well, tell us what went on in the last session. I mean, the session was a couple of months, so I mean, I don't spend a couple of months here, but give us a highlight of what went on.
Well, it was an interesting year. I got elected in May of 22 and got reelected in November of 22. So my first full session was in 23, and we run from January. Mid-January to mid-May, and this year was my second full session, and this is was a unique year because the entire legislature was up for re-election. Every member of the Senate, every member of the House. So it was a little different, I think, than the first year, because I think people were a little more guarded in some of their positions and some of the ways that they address things, and the Senate in particular, I think, was very mindful of what they were taking up this year. But nevertheless, I think it was a very good year, and I think it's best to probably analyze them together. And I think what you see at the State House right now is we had new leadership. I guess that's probably the best place to start. With the passing of Senator Leatherman and his death, it was kind of a passing of the guard in the Senate. And now you have Senator Alexander, Thomas Alexander from the upstate, is the president of the Senate. Senator Peeler from Gaffney is the majority leader in the Senate. And you also have Senator Massey from Edgefield that is in a leadership position over there. And then in the House, Speaker Jay Lucas, who had been there for, I guess, about 10 years or so, retired. And Merle Smith was elevated from Ways and Means to the speakership in 23. So this was the first time all these guys were together. Bruce Bannister from Greenville is now the Ways and Means Chairman in the House. And so it was a little bit of a getting to know you period for the leadership in both bodies. But what I can say to you in a nutshell is that with the leadership of Governor McMaster, these gentlemen that are in these leadership positions have been working very diligently to position the state of South Carolina to move forward in a very successful way. And so my initial statement would be that the state of South Carolina is in very good financial position, is in very good position to move forward from an economic standpoint. And in terms of the creation of jobs, in terms of the state budget, in terms of having the conditions right to be successful and to prosper and to give people opportunities to individually prosper. So I think what we've been working on is trying to get the pieces of the puzzle in place so that we can all move forward in a very positive way.
So in addition to a favorable legislature, the governor's position has been very helpful.
Governor McMaster When he finishes his term in 26, will be the longest serving governor we've ever had. And I think he really built upon some economic development wins that Governor Haley had during her term. And he's really taken it to another level. He has been very proactive and has worked very well with the legislature to recruit industry to South Carolina and continue to build our economy in such a way that we are all benefiting from that.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that because, you know, Governor McMaster is somewhat of a, I guess in quotes, a southern gentleman. He's not very flamboyant, and he doesn't toot his own horn much.
Right.
So the big thing is that he works together with the legislature, and that can bring us to a whole new level in South Carolina that we haven't seen in the past.
He has, I won't say that Governor McMaster hasn't used the bully pulpit from time to time, but he has done it in a very respectful way. But he is absolutely, he has communicated with the leadership in both bodies and has pledged to work together to make South Carolina better, and I think that's what we've been doing. So I can talk about, you know, individual issues or talk about the economy. We have some very important things we're working on here locally. I guess probably the best place to start is we have, for about 18 months, the House has had a study committee looking at ways that we can improve energy production in the state. And you and I have talked about this before. We had a very good plan to develop nuclear energy that went south when Westinghouse bankrupted and the whole VC summer ordeal unfolded. I think there's still some scar tissue in the legislature over that series of events, but it is time to move past that, move forward, and start figuring out how we're going to produce energy in the state of South Carolina. So we've been looking at that in the House. We got a bill together. Unfortunately, it did not fully come together till late in the session. And we passed an energy bill in the House that the Senate was not able to take up before the end of the session. They have a study committee together now, and they will be looking at that bill in the off season. And we are very hopeful that come January, we'll be able to get a bill up that both bodies can vote on. What that does for the state is we continue to move away from coal-burning systems and are moving towards natural gas systems.
Yes.
That's a big deal for us here locally because Dominion owns that shuttered plant in Canada's, and the bill allows Santee Cooper to partner with Dominion to build a bigger plant than Dominion can build by themselves.
Correct.
And so if we're able to advance this legislation, we will see the two of them immediately going to work to get this plant up and running. It'll be a tremendous economic boost for the county. It'll create jobs that are local. People won't have to travel to get to them. It will breathe new life into the Canada's community, and it will help Collin County attract business to create even more jobs. Also, a bunch of construction jobs too, Frank, that will be created.
Well, you see, I'm really glad that you touched on this because a few weeks ago we had Bill Hager and Scott Baring in here, and Scott was able to talk about, you know, the local benefits to that plant, and counties on a microcosm of the county.
Right.
Bill gave us a good overview of how it would help the power grid and about the workings of the plant and how environmentally sound that was. You had alluded to the Westinghouse issue that went defunct years ago, and yeah, that we all suffer from it till this day.
Right.
But I think what it did do was make the legislature aware of the amount of oversight that needs to be held
right.
on these, on these entities that are actually, they're spending taxpayer money. How are you folks taking that into consideration?
Well, let me touch on one thing about the energy first, and then I'll get to that. And I don't want to belabor anything that, mm-hmm. that Bill has already touched on, because he's far more astute about these issues than I am anyway. But we've got a serious, because of not having that nuclear online right now, we have a major issue in needing electric production. We do not have enough power on the system right now. And so one very important point, I think, is that SEENG was bought out by Dominion. You have completely new leadership on the Dominion side, and then the legislature forced out everybody at Santee Cooper that was involved with Westinghouse, and Santee Cooper has new leadership, and we have a new governor. So I think the players that were involved 10 years ago are no longer there, and now the legislature is cognizant of what they need to do, and there will not be a Westinghouse involved in this operation, and we will have all of these plans. They've already been submitted to the PSC, and there's a reform of the PSC component to the energy bill that we drafted in the House, and we're waiting to see what the Senate does with that. So there will be oversight for what is taking place, just as there was oversight with the plant that Dominion built in Jasper County that I'm sure Bill probably talked about.
Yes. And just, not that you need any reinforcement, but just that I think people in general are recognizing that any future development or any future fiscal growth that's going to occur in South Carolina involves a three-legged stool.
Right.
All right? It involves the educational system, it involves housing, and it involves the infrastructure.
Yep.
And this will give us the infrastructure. I know that folks are looking at, at housing and the school system, though it's in progress. There are excellent opportunities for education in Carlton County. There's private schools that are not at great cost.
Yep.
There's charter schools, and then there's the public school system, and the public school system, I think, is improving every day. Maybe not at the pace that everybody wants, but they are improving. And infrastructure thing with the electricity, that's the third leg.
Yep.
And that's the one that really the local people of the county don't have that much control over. They can control development, they can control the school system, but that electrical infrastructure is the thing that we depend on the legislature for. Yeah.
So let's touch on, and I like your three-legged stool analogy. We talked about the energy piece, but let's talk about education and the infrastructure piece. So, the Interstate 95 was created in the early 70s. I think I was about 10 years old when it was built. We were living in Reesville at the time, and that was a really big deal to go out and see the construction going on. But our roads and bridges are aging, and they are getting to the end of their shelf lives. And so I think the legislature did a good job 6, 7, 8 years ago recognizing that. And at that point, I was on the DOT commission, and they funded a program to address a need that had existed for about 30 years. And so we've got probably 5 times, maybe 6 times the amount of money in the system now that we had 15, 17 years ago. And so those are being addressed, and the legislature, both of the years that I have been here, has put significant monies into the road and bridge system. And what the DOT has gotten back to us with over the last year, Frank, is that more and more bridges are in need of either repair or replacement. So that is going to be an ongoing thing that we've got to address, and we're doing it.
Now, I-95, whose responsibility is it to maintain I-95?
It's our responsibility.
It's the state of South Carolina.
State of South Carolina's responsibility, yes.
And improvement and widening as well?
Mm-hmm. And we were able to get federal funding for certain things, and recently Senator Graham and Representative Clyburn got money to replace the bridges at Lake Marion, which is something that's been needed for quite a while. And so we continue to look at ways to address that, but right now there's funding in place to get the first 33 miles of 95 widened. And as you know, I just came back from Florida at the end of June. That's a bottleneck. As soon as you hit South, you don't need a welcome to South Carolina sign. You know when you hit South Carolina. So the Bluffton-Jasper area is booming right now.
Yes.
And so the quicker we can get those first 8 miles done, and get people to 278, the better. And I think we're well on the way to doing that. And I would like to give an attaboy to DOT Commissioner Barnwell Fishburne, because he has been pushing the DOT to accelerate timelines on that project every chance he gets. And so Barnwell's been doing a very good job for Colleton County and the lower part of the state on that issue.
How many running miles do we have on 95? Do you have any idea?
How many miles total?
Yeah.
Well, there's I just went to North Carolina as well, so there's about I'd say roughly 200 total.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. And we could tell that by the exits, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
And so, but good things are happening on the road and bridge front. The problem is this inflation that has hit over the last 4 years has made the cost of doing business extremely expensive.
Crazy.
And the time it takes to obtain right-of-ways and move utilities and get the things done on the ground that you need to do before you can start paving is pretty significant. So it takes time to do these projects, but they are ongoing on every major highway in the state right now. And so I feel good about where we are there. With education, the focus for Governor McMaster and the focus for Speaker Merle Smith has been to improve teacher pay, and we've done that both years that I've been in the legislature. The focus has been to improve technical college education. The focus has been to partner the high schools with the technical colleges and to partner the technical colleges with the industries that are coming here. We've been creating all kinds of great educational opportunities for kids to go straight into a Volvo or a Boeing or a Mercedes or even a smaller local operation such as Banks Construction and get hands-on experience in doing real-world jobs. And so we have been trying to create an atmosphere where kids can take advantage of not only higher education opportunities but also technical college opportunities. And so I do believe right now we are well on our way to having a system where world-class companies want to come here because they know we are training our people. And we've put a lot of effort, both structurally and monetarily, into workforce development. Our Department of Workforce executive director was in Walterboro a couple of months ago speaking to the annual meeting of the Southern Carolina Alliance over at the Wildlife Center. And a major focus of Speaker Smith has been to build that part of our economy. And so we have focused not only on keeping kids safe in schools, and we've got school resource officers in every school now. We've focused on making sure that they are being educated and not indoctrinated. We have focused on improving starting teacher pay, but also all teachers, giving them boosts in pay to try to keep those teachers in the system. And I think that we're making progress. Are we finished yet? No. But I do believe that the right people are in place to make good decisions for our education at the state level, for sure.
Well, got to say that that's an obstacle, and you have to really be multifaceted to address all these issues.
I like that word because one of the neat things about the legislature, particularly in the House, because we have 170 members, there are 170 members in the House, 46 members in the Senate. One used to be one senator per county. It's not that way now, but there's still 46 senators. But we have 170 members in the House, and we all come from diverse backgrounds. We all have different occupations, and we all have different skill sets. And so it is really neat to be able, as we said a few minutes ago, to lean on a Bill Hager when you need information about how Dominion works and how the energy sector operates. And then you'll have somebody who's a retired educator, like Coach Jackie Hayes over in Dillon, who can help you with school matters. And then you have a really bright guy like Merle Smith as speaker, who has knowledge about a lot of different topics, and on and on. And so we're able to draw on each other's experience. We have at least two retired highway patrolmen on the House side, and at least, I think, probably three or four former prosecutors. So those type things really help when you're trying to figure out, you know, what the best thing is to do.
And that's good because, you know, if you had a legislature of a one-trick pony,
right?
You know, you kind of get it's like myopic, you know. There's an elephant in this room. Have you seen it? Are you at liberty at all to talk about the Freedom Caucus and what's going on?
Well, yeah.
I'm just saying what I saw. What I saw in the newspaper. All right.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I go and I watch one of your favorite news sources.
Yeah.
Fitz News.
Right.
And you know, they had a big thing on about R.J. May.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, it's been really interesting. I don't know how long they existed before I got up there, but they really kind of went full throttle these last 2 years. And Representative May has for some time, I'm not sure how long, but for some time he has been managing campaigns for different candidates across the state, and not just House members, but all types of offices. And that's fine if that's what he likes to do for a living. That's his prerogative. But what he started doing in 2022, I think for the first time, was managing campaigns against sitting House members. The first one that I'm aware of was Representative Travis Moore up in the upstate, and then he was also actively involved in my initial campaign in 2022, working for my opponent. Now, at that point in time, I was not a member of the House, so that's a tad different, but that's what he was doing and continued to do as this Freedom Caucus idea took shape. And they have been very vocal. They have been very active on social media. They have been very quick to conduct press conferences, and I will say they've been very effective at working social media. I'll give them credit for that. What they've not been effective with has been working with the other members of the legislature to advance legislation. And the General Assembly has set up, Frank, and I know you know this, but I'm saying this for the benefit of the listening audience. The General Assembly is set up with a committee structure. The Speaker in the House assigns every member of the House to one or more committees. And when bills are introduced, those bills are assigned to committees. And that is where the rubber meets the road. And legislation is vetted through these committees. And the idea, and I can only speak to the House because I'm not in the Senate, the idea is that once a bill comes out of committee, it should be pretty good to go. There may be some tweaking because you never know when somebody might come up with an idea that needs to be included in the bill. But when they come out of committee and are headed to the floor, they should be ready to be voted on practically. And so what they've been doing is not making any effort to engage with the other members of the legislature in committee, wait on the bills to hit the floor, and then introduce a bunch of amendments to the bills that nobody's had a chance to read, digest, and talk about.
Have they had representation in those committees to
yes.
modify the bills?
Every member of the legislature of the House is in a committee.
All right, so they're in the committees, but they don't make the changes.
Well, and even if you're not a committee member, if you introduce legislation, you can go to the committee meeting and be there and ask the committee chair to let you address the bill if somebody has questions about it. So
it's more of a process of them being obstructive rather than constructive. Is that?
I think that's a fair way to put it. So the reason that I say all that is to say that they have been real quick to jump on social media to criticize any particular bill, any particular member of the body, and then one of their own apparently has some legal trouble, and I haven't heard a peep out of them. And they haven't issued any kind of statement. And they are really good at issuing press releases. They're really good at holding press conferences. And they just haven't said a word. And maybe that's because they don't know. And that's fair. But Representative May, apparently, according to Fitz News and the state newspaper, had a search warrant served on his home, on his personal devices, by Homeland Security and the State Law Enforcement Division. And nobody has pushed back on the service of that search warrant. What they were looking for, I do not know. But they apparently seized his laptop and his cell phone. And if the federal government is serving you with a search warrant, it's a very serious issue. He has a right to remain silent. He has the right to be presumed innocent. But the Freedom Caucus is not being charged or not being investigated. Representative May is. And the Freedom Caucus, in my opinion, has an obligation to those who follow them and has an obligation to the general public, since they're out raising money and running campaigns, to speak to that. And they can say whatever they want to say, but they've been silent, and I just find that to be totally opposite to how they normally operate.
Ironically, on that same note, Fitz News, who is one of R.J. May's greatest proponents, I mean, Will Faulx has actually come out and said that, you know, in so many words, that R.J. Mays was one of his darlings, you know. I mean, they agreed on a lot, and they had him on a lot. Has been very quiet and reserved about the whole thing.
I think that Mr. Faulx and Representative May agree philosophically on a lot of things, so I think that's probably the main reason that they would have a good working relationship. But he had, and listen, I have no idea. I doubt that there's any more information that anybody can get right now. If it's an active investigation, no law enforcement agency is going to talk about it. And you know, I'm not representing Representative May, but if I was representing him, I would tell him not to say a word. It's just one of those situations. But we will all reserve commentary, I think, as to his situation until we know more about it. But I can just tell you that having been a state prosecutor for almost 8 years and having defended people in court for the better part of my career, any time that the federal government, along with the state law enforcement division, shows up at your house with a warrant, that ain't a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll leave it at that.
Well, let's hope it all works out for him. I can tell you that I know of his consulting agency.
Right.
His political consulting company was, I almost said top-notch, but I don't want to use that term. I want to say they were very effective in what they accomplished.
I think they have been in certain parts of the state, but I don't think they've been very effective in others. And I'll go back to my race. I don't think they did a very good job. In my first race, they spent more time making up things about my record than they did promoting their own candidate.
Right, let's say this about that. That consulting firm is very, very financially driven.
We'll be right back with more from Frank on Target after these messages.